Our next case is AltaWan, Incorporated v. Amazon, 2022-13-49. Mr. Gerst, when are you ready?
Thank you, Your Honor. Graham Gerst on behalf of AltaWan. I'd like to begin with construction of cooperating service.
Okay, so apparently neither one of you is interested in the Jang versus Boston Scientific problem that exists here, but I am.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I don't understand why there's not infringement. Is it because the Amazon system doesn't provide service if the internet goes down because of a nuclear attack?
Yes, Your Honor. So as the record is absolutely clear that both at Markman and in our briefing to this court, that the issue with cooperating service provider is that no system can be absolutely provide bandwidth that is always available and always sufficient under all possible circumstances. And that's what the caveat that we sought to add in Markman for the definition of...
So that's the sole reason that Amazon doesn't infringe, is that if the internet goes down, it doesn't provide service.
Correct, Your Honor.
So can I ask another question?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're saying that Amazon provides sufficient bandwidth even for a worst-case scenario, and assuming that even if the network, okay, let's exclude the circumstance where everything goes down, the internet goes down. Do they otherwise provide enough bandwidth that there would not be a possible problem, like there's more bandwidth than a customer could possibly need?
Your Honor,
they make promises.
Sure.
That kind.
Because this case proceeded under the court's construction at Markman, which was that cooperating service providers provide blocked bandwidth, that was what the court ruled at Markman originally in the case, meaning reserved bandwidth. That is what the expert reports. That's what all the infringement analysis proceeded to assume.
That it was reserved.
That it was reserved bandwidth. And so that's what the record supports.
And Amazon supplies reserved bandwidth.
Absolutely.
And there was no consideration of how much or the quality of that reserve.
There was no consideration of that, Your Honor. And again, that was the rules that we were going under, the court's claim construction. And then at summary judgment, the court reversed itself and went back and said, no, actually, it means non-blocking bandwidth, meaning always available, always sufficient under all possible circumstances. And I agree, Your Honor, it's an absurd interpretation to read it to mean available under all circumstances, including nuclear war. And that's what we tried to clarify.
I think you would have been better off if you'd made that clear in the stipulation.
Well, Your Honor, so it's clear from the record, even in the Jang case, Your Honor, you said if you can understand it from the record, and it is clear from the Markman briefing that was the issue before the district court. It was also clear, and it's clear in our submissions that is the issue. It's rife throughout this issue. It's rife throughout the oral argument during Markman, so it's part of the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
But we don't even need to get there because a court needs a justification to move away from the strong presumption in terms of plain meaning. And cooperating service provider, it's undisputed, cooperating and service provider have plain meanings. Amazon's own proposed construction uses the word service provider, so there's no dispute about that term, and they don't dispute the plain meaning of cooperating. The written description, a support, exists in the specification for service providers.
Doesn't help you if non-blocking is given the interpretation the district court did, that it always has to be available, even if the internet goes down.
So that's not correct, Your Honor. So if the plain meaning of cooperating service provider is a service provider that cooperates, then we never get to the issue of non-blocking bandwidth. The court only inserted that definition of non-blocking with at the very end of the case. And, Your Honor, this definition, this non-blocking...
Do you agree with that definition of non-blocking? I mean, it's right in your spec. You say that that's kind of a crazy meaning, but that's the meaning that is written in the specification expressly.
Well, Your Honor, that's correct. But we know, for example, in the Vervey Crane Cams case that we cited in our briefing, and also in the Echolab case, when something is obvious from the specification to persons of skill in the art. And this would have been obvious to persons of skill in the art that the definition was not going to that next step. The definition excluded this caveat while the network is always available and always operational. Persons of skill in the art, network engineers, would have understood that definition.
I think you have a stronger argument, personally, I think the COSAs kind of maybe go both ways on that scenario, whether you read that in or not when you're being your own lexicographer. But I think you have a stronger argument saying there's no reason to read blocked bandwidth as meaning non-blocking bandwidth.
Well, Your Honor, absolutely. But first, there's not a single case that that Amazon has cited that suggests that you should not read a caveat like this into the definition. They point to a different case, the Chef America case, but that wasn't construing a definition. But let me go to your point. And again, you're sort of assuming that we don't need to go with plain meaning here, and there is no justification. There's no disavowal. There's no special definition. And this non-blocking bandwidth...
Can I ask you,
you've
talked about disavowal, so I have some questions to ask you. In column 6 of your specification, mm-hmm. you say all species and the genus of the invention will solve the bandwidth bottleneck that has plagued prior attempts, and you go on and say that how they're going to do that is by having, among other things, that the Ultra One network, which all species has, is a data path between other participating ISX providers, a data path which is guaranteed to have sufficient bandwidth to be able to handle the worst case bandwidth consumption of the customer. Why isn't it improper to at least understand that is required by your claim?
So, Your Honor, two things. One, what's being referred to there about sufficient bandwidth is different than non-blocking bandwidth, the definition of non-blocking bandwidth, okay?
Well, even if let's say I agree with you.
This reference is referring to what occurs between ISX providers. That's what it says. And that's also the one place in the whole specification where it talks about non-blocking bandwidth. It does so in the context of ISX providers. ISX providers are...
Okay, look, this has no bearing on the outcome here, because your position is that even if we take the definition from the specification, you know, always available adequate bandwidth, that Amazon satisfies that, right?
So if you take the definition of non-blocking bandwidth from the definition of the specification, and we're just talking about non-blocking bandwidth, no, because a person of skill in the art would understand that there's this caveat that you need to add while the network is operational.
No, we'll put that aside.
The
fact is, the question is, what do we have to decide here?
Yes.
Which Jang is right. You seem to be arguing that this bandwidth is always available and is adequate under your interpretation of that language, that Amazon satisfies that. There doesn't seem to be a factual dispute there where this other claim construction has any significance.
The claim construction of which? Of cooperating service provider?
Yeah.
No, actually, it's just the opposite, Your Honor. So we think that there is infringement under the court's original construction of a service provider that agrees to provide blocked bandwidth.
Why does it matter? Assuming we adopt your construction of non-blocking bandwidth, what does it matter whether a cooperating service provider is a provider that cooperates or a provider who provides adequate bandwidth?
Provides because, reserve bandwidth, you mean, Your Honor?
Yeah, in your view, Amazon does that.
If it is a service provider that cooperates, yes, there is infringement. If it is a service provider that provides blocked bandwidth, as the file history talks about, then yes, there is infringement. But if it is a service provider that provides non-blocking bandwidth as defined in the specification with no alteration, then there is no infringement.
Well, that seems to be the one issue that's before us. The other, you know, in other words, there's no infringement because they don't provide service when the internet goes down. Okay? That's a claim construction issue that affects the result here. This other question of whether a cooperating service provider has to provide non-blocking bandwidth or not seems to have no impact on the outcome, because you say that Amazon does provide adequate bandwidth under all circumstances where the internet is operational.
I didn't say that, Your Honor. That wasn't the issue that discovery was about. That wasn't the issue that the experts opined on, whether or not there is sufficient bandwidth. The experts sought to determine, and their expert reports dueled over whether there was reserved bandwidth. Once again, the court's construction that governed all expert discovery was, for cooperating service providers, do they provide blocked, meaning reserved bandwidth? That's what all the evidence is about.
And you say they do provide reserved
bandwidth. They provide reserved bandwidth. Yes, Your Honor, we do. But then the court reversed itself into a situation where it said, well, it's service providers that provide non-blocking bandwidth. And non-blocking bandwidth, absolutely, even in the event of nuclear war. And so, therefore, under that construction, there is no infringement.
Mr. Gersh, there's an additional problem here, and that's that none of the briefs tell us what claims are at issue. We've got two patents at issue on appeal. I think it's the 478 and the 471. Am I right about that?
The 478 and the 471, Your Honor, yes.
Which claims are at issue?
So, Your Honor, if you look...
And which claims? Because the 478 is the one that talks about cooperating service provider. The 471 has some non-blocking bandwidth language in it. I need to know, you need to know, which claims are at issue?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's at Appendix 3 in the Stipulation of Non-Infringement, which lists the claims remaining as the summary judgment are for the 478 patent. So it lists those, the claims that were at issue at that point in time. With respect to the 471, Your Honor, I can see that the claims of the 471 are not listed here in the stipulation of non-infringement. As far as I can see it. But certainly those claims...
What are the claims on appeal?
Pardon me?
What are the claims on appeal?
The claims on appeal are claims 1, 4, 6, 14, 18, 19, 25, 28, 51, 52, 55.
So the ones that it says, where is the claims remaining as of the summary judgment hearing? And that is only the 478 patent.
So...
This is your stipulation.
So our stipulation refers to claims specifically of the 478 patent. It does not separately list the claims of the 471 patent.
Wait. Then if the claims with respect to the 471 or whatever it is aren't resolved by the stipulation, then we don't have a final judgment.
Your Honor, if you want to focus on the 478 patent and the claims of the
478 patent. Question. Do we have a final judgment?
Let's see what it says. It does say that it refers to the 471 patent and the construction there. I'm just looking for the reference to the 471 here. So it's in Appendix 4.1, it says Amazon does not infringe. It does not infringe the 478 and 471 patents. So and then paragraph 2. The party stipulated to the entry of judgment of non-infringement of the 478 and 471 patents. So at Appendix 3 and 4. It doesn't separately list the claims, but on remand, it was clear what claims were still pending. But again, Your Honors, if you want to focus just on the 478 patent, it's really those claims that are most critical here. Because the word routing, for example...
You understand,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Though, that you say if we want to just rely on that. Are you now giving up the 471 patent then?
I'm not giving up the 471 patent.
Need to tell us which claims are at issue.
Your Honor, I've got to give up the 471 patent for now because, I don't have that listed here separately.
And if you want, when you sit down, you could develop that list or get somebody to develop that list.
We will. We'll try to do that.
And before you sit down, these patents are expired also.
These patents are expired. Yes, Your Honor.
Any other litigation going on?
No other litigation going on.
Thank you. I'll give you your 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Haddon.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Dave Haddon for Amazon. Let me try to straighten out a little of what you just heard because
okay,
I don't think it accurately...
Is the basis for the non-infringement finding that Amazon doesn't provide service when the internet is down?
That is not the basis.
Well, how are we supposed to know what the basis is?
Yes, Your Honor. Good question. So... The issue in the case that got resolved as summary judgment was whether blocked bandwidth which is a term that only appears in the file wrapper, is the same as non-blocking bandwidth, which is the definition of the invention in the specification.
Please answer my question. If that's not the basis, what is the basis?
So the basis is what the basis that, is
in your view.
Like, yes, what is it that the Amazon's product doesn't
Amazon's product does not provide sufficient bandwidth to meet everybody's need, whether the internet is up or down. That was the issue. So,
but your adversary says that was never the subject of discovery. You could assert that.
That's the part I wanted to correct, Your Honor. So that is the part I wanted to correct, because that is not the case. So what happened was, at claim construction, Judge Noriega said, cooperating service provider, I'm going to construe it based on the file wrapper, because it's not a term used in the spec. And she says, I will construe it as it says in the file wrapper, someone that provides block bandwidth. She says, if you don't know what block bandwidth is, come back and we'll resolve that at summary judgment. So during expert discovery, the parties had two options. Block bandwidth meant non-blocking bandwidth, that is bandwidth that would always be available and always sufficient, which is the position that Amazon took throughout this case.
Okay, but how do we know that the stipulation rests on that term and the fact that Amazon doesn't have that kind of bandwidth available to the customer?
The evidence in the record, Your Honor, is from our summary judgment briefing on non-infringement and the expert reports that are in the record.
Even if that's the case, isn't there... I mean, one of the problems I'm having is a stipulation between the parties. The parties should have some sort of meeting in the mind on why it is that there's not infringement. Maybe even the patent owner who's stipulating should have the best say on why there's no infringement. But you've got nothing here.
Your Honor, and this is an issue. Their expert put in no opinion in his report, his infringement reports, under the alternative construction of cooperating service provider. That is, someone that provides bandwidth that is always sufficient and always available.
You have to create a summary judgment motion that the judgment doesn't rest on. You know, you've entered into a stipulation which, in my mind, is totally unclear as to what's going on here and why there is non-infringement. And you're asking us to parse the record here to provide a ground for non-infringement that the parties have not agreed on. And I don't see any way out of this other than to send this case back to have a better stipulation or a better determination of why there's non-infringement here and what claim construction leads to that result.
Well, I understand your concern, Your Honor. The issue is the court resolved their claim construction summary judgment motion. We had a pending written description motion, which is, if non-blocking bandwidth is different than block bandwidth, we have no written description. The court didn't get to that motion or our summary judgment motion of non-infringement because Judge Noriega has this sort of sudden death procedure. Once you lose, you get no more. It was clear, and it's in the transcript that is in the appendix, that Altawan had no expert opinion applying the construction that requires bandwidth that's always sufficient and always available.
That's a summary judgment issue.
I understand, Your Honor. And the court said, okay, I'm going to give you another opportunity to put in a new expert report that addresses this construction, even though you knew it was in play and you should have addressed it. The alternative Judge Noriega gave AlterOn was to stipulate to non-infringement. After some time, they came back and said, okay, we're going to stipulate to non-infringement. There was no suggestion that the non-infringer was based on this, the internet being up or down. The issue was they had no theory where Amazon provides all the bandwidth a customer could want.
You just said it was they had no evidence to show always sufficient, always available. I understand you're saying maybe they could have provided, there could have been some more of a factual dispute about the amount of bandwidth, but claim construction was not the claim construction that was at play, right? The claim construction at play was always sufficient, always available.
That was the construction, yes, Your Honor.
And so why wouldn't it be that the non-infringement is based on Amazon not having...
Sure. So the issue, and it's actually, I can find something in the record that described this. It's actually at Appendix 1088. Is a chart, the infringement chart from Alter One's expert.
I'm sorry, 1088?
1088.
Okay, thank you.
And it's useful to understand what was accused here. So the service that is accused is something called Direct Connect. And it is a way actually for customers to get data into AWS without using the internet at all. It is just a physical cable that goes from an Amazon server in a data center to a customer server in the same data center. And that is what their expert pointed to. And that connection can be purchased at different port speeds, right? And you pay for a port speed, you get that port speed. You don't get all the bandwidth you could want. You don't get any guarantee of any bandwidth within Amazon's network. And so their expert said, well, that meets the definition of reserve bandwidth because it's got a fixed port speed. He never opined that it satisfied all of the customer's bandwidth requirements, whether the internet was up or down. It had nothing to do with whether the internet was up or down because this theory doesn't rely on the internet at all. The only issue was whether reserve, that is, you get a 1 gigabyte port, is that sufficient to meet the claim requirement? And what the court said, no, reserved is not the construction. The construction is the bandwidth that will satisfy the customer.
Parse the record here and make a determination of what the parties should have agreed to, even though the actual agreement doesn't reflect this. I mean, that seems to me not appropriate.
Well, I think I understand the concern. We were in this procedural situation where we had an option to either they would come up with a theory or not.
But the lesson is to maybe identify in the stipulation why it is that there's a stipulation, right? I mean, that is what other parties do in other cases. And that's what Jane counsels as well, that you need to provide context for the court so the court can resolve the issue before it. And we've got a situation where there's parties have two different reasons for why this stipulation occurred. One of them says that it's because Amazon doesn't satisfy the very strict definition of non-blocking bandwidth. And the other one says, no, it's simply because even if the internet was running, Amazon's service doesn't always provide enough bandwidth even in the worst case scenario.
Okay.
That makes it hard.
Understood, Your Honor, but it seems like the court's construction of non-blocking bandwidth has to be right. It is the definition in the spec. If that's the case, and clearly cooperating service provider cannot be any service provider that works with somebody else. That's not the invention in the spec.
Right, but it also seems a little odd to take a very narrowly defined term, non-blocking bandwidth, and say equate that with blocked bandwidth in the prosecution history without something else allowing us to just equate those terms. There's no evidence allowing us to, intrinsic evidence equating those terms that would make me feel comfortable equating them.
Understood, but block bandwidth is agreed not a term of art. It was a term that was introduced in the prosecution history 10 years after the spec. In a description of these cooperating service providers.
I know, and your adversary says, no, it means like I blocked these seats for you, right?
I'm sorry?
I mean, they say it means something like I blocked these seats for you.
Yeah, but that's not described in the spec either, right?
The
spec
has this. But the spec doesn't use non-blocking. That very narrow definition of non-blocking is only used once.
Well, it's
many used... other places it says high bandwidth,
low hop count, and
other places it says there has to be a promise that you're going to provide sufficient bandwidth, even for the worst case scenario, right?
Right, but if it defines participating ISPs and ISXs as those that will promise to provide sufficient bandwidth to meet the worst case customer requirements, That, that is equivalent to...
Why is that the same as the definition of non-blocking bandwidth?
Well, if you... If you guarantee bandwidth that will always meet the worst-case requirements of the customer, that's the equivalent of bandwidth that will always be available and sufficient, right? It's the same thing. It's all the bandwidth the customer could want to eat whenever they need it.
So I think I gather what you're saying right now is that there isn't a Jang problem if we agree with the district court's constructions. Is that what you're saying? Because at a minimum, Amazon, everybody agrees that Amazon doesn't continue to work if the internet fails.
Sure. So there's two points, Judge Stoll. One is Amazon does not provide all the bandwidth you can eat, right? And that would be required under the court's construction.
I think that's an issue we wouldn't be able to address under Jang.
Okay, so if you don't address that, then if you agree with the definition of non-blocking bandwidth in the specification, which says it's always available and always sufficient, then they have stipulated that Amazon can't infringe, and so it's game over. Now, there's no reason to modify that, this force majeure notion. I mean, what does it mean for the network not to be operational? Right, routers go down all the time.
They don't agree in this court that they lose under that construction.
No, I think they do agree. That's in the stipulation. They agree that under the court's construction,
it's totally unclear as to what's being agreed to.
Well, the stipulation does say that
Amazon has not infringed.
Right.
It does not infringe.
It's paragraph one. Under the court's construction, cooperating service provider,
yeah,
non-blocking bandwidth.
Why is the problem?
I'm sorry,
it doesn't say why Amazon doesn't infringe. You have different views about why Amazon doesn't infringe.
Understood, Your Honor. But
so
if the
stipulation doesn't help us.
It doesn't help you in understanding why, but if you affirm the district court's constructions, then the stipulation is binding.
Do you agree that Amazon doesn't have bandwidth that will always be available and will always be sufficient, that that is one basis for the stipulation?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry? That
I was asking if you agree that that is at least one basis for the stipulation.
Yes, Your Honor. If there's other issues, I'd happy to address. I want to make clear that the suggestion in the beginning that the court construed originally block bandwidth as reserved bandwidth and the parties operated under that construction is incorrect. The court said, I'm not going to tell you what block bandwidth is at this point. There were competing interpretations, and our expert addressed both. Their expert didn't address the one the court ultimately adopted. They got another opportunity to do that. They chose not to do it. Instead, they entered this stipulation. So what we know is, based on the court's construction, Amazon doesn't infringe under the stipulation.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gerst, we'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Gerst, I want to ask you one question right away.
Yes, Your Honor. And just for clarification,
In the context of the stipulation why there's not infringement? Because the reason why I ask is because I thought you were agreeing that Amazon doesn't operate even if the internet fails, and therefore Amazon does not have non-blocking bandwidth as that term is defined by the district court below.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Because of the court, with the court at summary judgment, required non-blocking bandwidth, and the definition of the court for non-blocking bandwidth is it's always available, always sufficient, even in the event of nuclear war. That is not true for Amazon. That is why there's no infringement. If you look at Appendix 431, in the Markman briefing, it specifies this. I can read it to you, but I have limited time. I just urge you to look at at 431. Zhang said you can look at the record to try and determine context, and it's clear, again, from Appendix 431, which is the party's Markman briefing.
And but that same rationale applies also to the cooperating service provider as defined by the district court to require someone who provides bandwidth that will always be available and will always be sufficient, right?
That's correct, yes. And just one other thing about Jang. Jang was a special unique case where the parties agreed that certain terms were irrelevant for infringement. So the court was already remanded to find which ones that was true for. And then it doubled that remand to say, while you're doing it, please provide the context. But Jiang cited to three different cases which all went forward, despite lack of context, with evaluating stipulations of non-infringement. Those are the Lava Trading, Wilson Sporting Goods case, and Massachusetts Institute of Technology's case. So if you follow those three cases are analogous to our situation if you're unsatisfied with the specificity actually in the stipulation. But again, Jiang says you can look at the record, look at Appendix 431. I want to point to one other thing.
Is your position that Amazon provides bandwidth that's always put aside that when the internet is down? Do you urge that Amazon does provide sufficient bandwidth that's always available if we consider the stipulation to define non-blocking bandwidth, that it satisfies that limitation?
If I understand your question, you're asking me does Amazon provide non-blocking bandwidth as the court has defined it with no caveat?
Yes.
No, it doesn't. Because, and again, according to Appendix 431, we say there's no system that has ever existed.
No. You're misunderstanding.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm putting that aside. I'm saying let's adopt your construction of non-blocking bandwidth, which doesn't have that limitation. It only requires that this be available when the internet is operating. Okay?
Sure.
Is your view that they infringe under that claim construction?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Can I just say one final thought. Counsel for Amazon said that the district court left the issue open about what blocked bandwidth meant. Your Honor, at Markman, as we pointed out in our brief, counsel for Amazon repeatedly agreed and explained to the district court that blocked bandwidth meant reserved bandwidth. That's what governed this entire case.
Thank you, counsel. I think we've run out of bandwidth.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.